Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When the Iran conflict began at the end of February, gas prices shot up and have been solidly above $4 a gallon in the past 5 months. Now, in the past, gas price shocks like this have always led to a spike in electric vehicle sales, and that's still in other markets. That's still the case, like in Europe and China and Southeast Asia. But in the U.S., electric vehicle sales have remained in something of a collapsed state since the ending of our $7,500 government incentive last September. So today, we're going to talk about why that is on this special episode of the Batteries Included podcast. I'm Dominic Chione, and I am joined today by Matthew Hunsinger, a social psychologist at Pacific University in Beaverton, Oregon, along with Lacey, better known to the world as Miss Go Electric. She has 15 years of experience in the automotive sector and currently runs the Miss Go Electric media empire. We also have Nikki Stern. She's the chief analyst at Escalent, a research company, and author of their EV Forward reports. Right. So I guess let's get going. So let's start by looking at some of the sales numbers for some context. These were put together by the Argonne National Laboratory. And pull them up. And right, so as we can see, so at the end of September, the government incentive was finished, and sales like plummeted. A lot of sales have been pulled forward. You know, they were a little bit higher than normal in September and August, but by September, you can see there's 5.2% of all the light duty vehicles sold in the U.S. were about 5.2% of the market. Then in January, it rose to 6.46. Then back down in February to 4.94. So then the conflict started and they saw a little rise, 5.48. April, 6.43, 6.81. Then back down in June to like 6.19. And then again in July, 5.38% of the market. So these numbers are very different from what we're seeing in other parts of the world. So I guess, Lacey, can we start with you? I just want to ask, what's consumer sentiment actually looked like for these past 5 or 6 months? Like, has it tracked what this chart shows, or does it feel different, like on the ground, or more different than what the numbers would suggest?
Well, I think what's interesting about this is that, you know, we're getting actually our projections are coming closer to what we saw before, kind of this chaotic situation of losing the tax credit and also the tariffs being implemented, because those are two major factors that were driving EV adoption or are now affecting the fact that people aren't buying new cars in the way that we had expected them as far as EVs go. But what is interesting is that since we have seen this, the gas prices rise and things of that nature with the tariffs, there's actually reporting that EV interest is growing. Now, that might not translate directly to sales, but earlier in the year, so a few months back, I host a weekly EV news show, and I think it was back in like April or May that Cars.com had reported that there was a 25% surge in searches for EVs in comparison to gas models, which saw a decline by almost 10%, and hybrids were a little bit of a rise, which was kind of surprising to me because I thought that that would be the first and most impactful number to see as an increase, but hybrids were only up about 7% or so. And so with this information, it does show that people are getting more and more curious with EVs, and they are tracking towards wanting to adopt an EV, but there are clearly some barriers still that are preventing them from doing so. So I definitely think that the interest is growing more and more because of gas prices, amongst other things. But I think it's also a good sign to see that we're starting to return closer to the numbers that we saw before all of this happening and getting back on track with the, you know, tiered approach of people adopting EVs as it was.
So that's kind of interesting. I'll just pop this thing back up on the screen again just for a moment, because we can see that although like hybrid interests had came up a little bit, actual sales came up, you know, a lot more. You know, they've been kind of consistently higher, it looks like, over the past little while. So that's just like another data point I thought we'd mention. Nikki, what does Escalent's research show for this window? Like anything that explains like the June reversal specifically?
I don't know if we have anything that shows about June specifically, because as Lacey was saying, the perceptions about EVs and the actual sales, sometimes it's a bit laggy. But we did take a pulse into this topic a few months ago about gas prices and the impact that gas prices have on buyers' consideration of BEVs. And we did find that consumers are noticing steep increases in gas prices over the past months, and that is impacting BEV consideration. But we found that the way it's impacting buyers is not even across all of the segments. So in EV Forward, we have a segmentation that identifies a group called EV intenders. And these are buyers who are about 15 times more likely to consider a BEV instead of, more likely to consider a BEV than the average buyer. And so we found specifically among these EV intenders that they are more likely to consider a BEV because of the increase in gas prices. So we are seeing this increase in consideration that could translate into more EV sales when they're ready to buy their next vehicle within the next 5 years. And we found that the impact of gas prices is most strong among those EV intenders. And then those groups that are a little more on the outskirts, who we call EV owner or EV open and EV resistant, they are less influenced by gas prices. So it's really those people who are showing stronger consideration for the powertrain. The rise in gas prices seems to be giving them a little bit of a nudge in the direction towards the powertrain. So I think overall, maybe gas prices aren't going to bring in new buyers who weren't already considering the powertrain, but it is a nice push or piece of encouragement for those where it is already on their consideration set. Because as Lacey was saying, there are these other considerations that need to be overcome, like the convenience of public charging or any anxieties there is around range or purchase price. So there is all these other considerations, but for those who are already working through those barriers, gas prices are definitely a nudge in the right direction for them.
Cool. So
Matt, can I add something to that?
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you, like, so you've heard all of that. So what's your, like, from a psychological point of view, what is going on with the public here?
Right. So I think it's, to some degree, and I'm speculating because this is not an area that I study, but I wonder if to some degree what's happening is that, you know, when gas prices increase or other macro factors are there that make people think about switching to a BEV, it's easier to think about it in the abstract, but then when they maybe think about, well, what does that actually look like at a more concrete level in terms of the lifestyle changes they'll have to make, or just, I mean, I'm an EV driver. I know you are, Dominic. I don't know, Nikki and Lacey, I don't know if you two are EV drivers. Yes, both of you are.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so,
I actually
okay,
everything
so,
electric in my life.
Okay.
Literally, I don't have anything gas.
I'm the same way. So, you know, the three of us who drive EV, we know that there's a learning curve and there's an adjustment curve that you have to undergo. And I'm sure, Nikki, you know about that just from, you know, doing the research that you do. And there's a real adjustment curve. And those of us who've driven EV for years are just used to it. And it maybe doesn't feel like a big deal. And it's because of the technology improvements, it's becoming less and less of a big deal, those adjustment pieces. But I wonder if that's why we're seeing an increase in hybrid. Because if someone is being impacted by the price of gas and they're feeling hesitant, like they're open or they're hesitant, but they're just not ready to go for it and make those adjustments to their lifestyle, or there's anxiety because they're like, well, what about range anxiety? Like, what if I go on a road trip and I'm not able to charge, right? There's some like structural factors that are a problem, but also just people not understanding that modern EVs don't really deal with the kinds of issues to the extent that they, you know, they perceive them to. So that's what I would think is happening. That's kind of an abstract versus concrete difference of thinking about it in the abstract versus actually making the move and having to adjust their life in the ways that they need to, because I'm sure we all know, right? Human beings, we love familiarity. We love predictability. And because of the perceived barriers that are there, I think it does threaten that perception of predictability. And then there also is just a real threat to familiarity, having to do things differently. It's just easier to just keep driving gas, you know, putting prices aside, just in terms of from the standpoint of the cognitive energy that we have to exert, you know, learning this new way of driving a car. Yeah. So that's, I'm speculating, but that's my guess. I don't know what the rest of you think about that speculation.
So Nikki mentioned an interesting thing about just like barriers that, you know, at least the perception of barriers out there, like the charging networks and things. And I know, Lacey, you did a video about a month ago about EV adoption, and you mentioned that. And so maybe you could just briefly talk about the gap in perception against the reality of what's actually happening on the ground with some of these structural elements like charging availability, say.
Yeah. Obviously, as we all know, because we are owners of EVs, the technology moves fast, and it has evolved incredibly since, you know, mass market EVs became a thing in like the 2010s. So people have these ideas of what EVs are based on information that occurred back then, and they haven't updated those ideas because they don't follow it as closely as people like us do. But the reality is that they're sticking with those. And to be fair, even someone who runs an EV channel and has comments coming through on a daily basis of people watching these videos that are, you know, geared towards EV buyers, they're not, you know, they're also susceptible to holding on to those antiquated ideas. I will say that it's just kind of human nature, in my opinion. But when we hear people talk about this topic. They're like, I can't get an EV yet, or even just on my on a daily basis. You know, in my background, I have been in the automotive business for a long time, and part of the work that I do is going into dealerships and training them on new products and EVs in particular. But I also go out to huge events where I interact with the public to tell them about this particular EV that I'm standing with. And I've worked with all of the brands, like a ton of brands. And to this day, people will still approach me and say, well, I can't get an EV because there's not enough charging. There's this or that. It's not enough range. It's, you know, those same topics, the battery is going to, you know, catch fire, or it's not going to last. I'm going to have to spend $80,000 to get a new battery pack. All of these are still concerns for people that are, they're continuing to regurgitate. And there's not, obviously these people aren't really searching out the truth of what it is now, which has incredibly advanced in comparison to where we were at back when the first mass market EVs became available. So I do think that that is still a massive thing to overcome. And that's actually why I started to come out with the series that you were talking about, Dominic, which is called The Complete Guide to Going Electric. And this first episode was about, have EVs been basically abandoned in the United States? And it uncovers all of the topics as to why we're in this position right now. And that is just a small sliver. There's a lot going on in the background as to the incentives that are at play for not only manufacturers to offer certain EVs, but that's just the situation. We're such a small market share of the automotive market of EV adoption. Like you were saying, just last month, I think it was up by 5.6% or something along those lines. So that is a incredibly small market share still, but there are countries like Ethiopia or Norway who are either 100% or close to 100%. So we can get there. It's just a matter of overcoming all of these barriers, which that they are. They're going to be hard to overcome, but eventually people will begin to overcome them.
Lacey, can I give an example of one thing Lacey said? So in terms of your point about some EV owners and drivers not, you know, having misunderstandings, I was talking to an EV driver a couple months ago who has an older Leaf, Nissan Leaf. And I asked her if we're talking about upgrade. And so I asked her if she considered getting like a newer Leaf. And she said, no, I don't want to, because I heard that the newer batteries are much worse for the environment. And so I was like, okay, well, I don't think that's true. So after we finished our conversation, I looked into it, looked at the research, and it's actually the opposite, that newer chemistries are actually better because they use, you know, like fewer, you know, rare minerals or metals. And so the time you have to spend driving before you break even and get ahead with, you know, pollution, is much shorter with newer chemistries. So, but I had to spend the time looking into that. And she, even though she'd driven this EV for years, like she never took the time. And I'm not saying that to fault her, but I think to your point, Lacey, people just, they hear something or they believe something, and they just, a tendency for us humans is just stick with that. Because again, it requires less cognitive energy to just stick with what you believe versus taking the time and investing the emotional, you know, cognitive energy and to vet, you know, the ideas that you have about EVs. And this, like you said, can also happen in EV drivers as well. And I think also one thing, like, you know, Lacey, you talked about your other European countries. We have much, in the United States, we have much lower levels of support at a collective level for environmental sustainability and reduce fossil fuel use compared to European countries. And so there will be more people in those European countries who will get an EV simply because they're trying to be a part of that, you know, movement. And there are going to be fewer drivers in the US who will buy an EV simply because, and that's how I started. I mean, I had an old, like a used Leaf back in 2015 that had a range of, I think like 50 miles on the highway. But I was willing to deal with that because of how important environmental sustainability, you know, is to me.
So I'd like to talk about the affordability paradox. So recently we've seen it, like a lot of people complaining about EVs being too expensive. We need cheap ones, but the cheap ones aren't really selling so much either. So the redesigned Nissan Leaf, it came onto the market. It's the second cheapest EV right now, I think, in America. It had a weak launch. It was a 668 units, I believe, in the first quarter of this year, which is 668 cars is a pretty small number in a mass market like this. The Chevrolet Bolt sold 4,224 units in the first half of 2026 versus like 16,249 vehicles for the more expensive Chevy Equinox EV. It's bigger brother has all kinds of dealer inventory sitting well above like healthy levels in the lots, apparently. So we have cheaper EVs in market, but they're not really selling like we expected. So Nikki, what does the actual sentiment data say about affordability? Like, is price really the top rejection reason, or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, so price is still a pretty big consideration and rejection reason, but I think it is more complicated than that. So when we survey buyers, we ask them what their some of their top considerations are when thinking about purchasing a new vehicle, just regardless of powertrain. And purchase price is always at the top of the list. So people are thinking about buying a new vehicle. And this, the price becomes even more apparent of a gap when you think about BEVs specifically, because those tend to be more expensive. But like you said, there are several automotive companies that are now releasing BEVs that are priced lower or comparable to other powertrains. So trying to overcome that affordability gap, but it is a little more complicated than that. So affordability and price for BEVs is not just about the sticker price. There's also other factors about affordability that come into play. And part of that is about perceived financial risks associated with purchasing a BEV. So something that Lacey mentioned was concerns about the battery, you know, degradation or the battery not working and then having to replace the battery. So that's a really big concern for a lot of consumers. But in reality, not many people are replacing their EV battery. That number is very low, as low or lower than people who have gas vehicles that have to replace their engine or transmission, which is also a considerable fix. And so those risks around the battery are playing into affordability concerns. And then there's also concerns about charging, home charging, public charging. There's this veil of unknown where people are already feeling the weight of high electricity prices in their home, and they're worried about adding a BEV into their household and wondering, well, what's that going to do to my electricity costs? It's probably going to go through the roof. And so there's these concerns that are more so in the unknown and not really knowing or being there's just misconceptions out there around BEVs that are causing affordability concerns. So perceived affordability concerns about those types of things. So I think in the end, it does really boil down to affordability and costs, but it's not just about the upfront purchase price. It's about expensive issues that might arise throughout ownership, whether that be maintenance or repairs. And then also throughout the lifetime of the vehicle, what are those costs going to be? It's kind of an unknown.
Right. Depreciation might play a factor there as well, right?
Right, definitely. Yeah, resale value is also something that people are concerned about with BEVs.
Right. So, Lacey, so what are you seeing in the affordable EV segment, specifically like Leaf Bolt? We have others coming, like the Kia EV3, the new $30,000-ish Ford electric pickup truck. There's the Slate little $25,000 truck. Are people aware that EVs are available in that $30,000 neighborhood or sometimes lower with company rebates and internal incentive programs?
I think some people are aware. I think there are still some considerations happening in the background, like for one with the Nissan Leaf in particular. They have reduced production of that vehicle because they've been having issues with getting supply for batteries. And so they had noted twice now that they are limiting inventory to dealerships in the United States, specifically for that reason. But also, again, you have to consider the tariffs as a profitability aspect on the automaker side of things as to do they really want to ship a car over there and lose money if they're going to eat those, or are they going to raise the prices and then see it sit on the lots for longer and dealers get mad and things of that nature. But there's also the conversation and kind of a similar conversation happening around the Chevy Bolt where they limited production as well. And people already know that that vehicle is going to be only in production for what now, like 16 or 15 more months or something along those lines before they discontinue it again. Because the story, once again, is all about profitability on the automaker side of things. Another thing that we should take note of is that the American market is a very popular market for SUVs. And that is more profitable for automakers. We see that the Model Y has successfully become the world's best-selling car, period, multiple times, and people really love that size and form factor. So we know that that an EV can be a bestseller because it has been historically, and it's on track to continue to do so. And when we look at the more affordable EVs that the legacy automakers are coming out with, they're these compact hatchback type style. I mean, Nissan does market the Leaf as a crossover, but in reality, it is a smaller, more like hatchback style feeling for people. And so that is the truth. And when they are considering affordability, I think people who are price sensitive to gas prices are the type of people who might not necessarily be in the market for a new car. Maybe they'll wait a little bit longer until they, you know, can decrease, you know, their impact on their fuel economy and things like that. They'll try to stretch it out to save money instead of having to make a purchase. But what we are seeing is in the used EV market, that is surging. And so affordability is excelling when it comes to used EVs. And those people are buying the Model Y mostly because, again, if you are to consider a used Model Y to get that in the price range of the $30,000 in comparison to getting a brand new Leaf, and it has a lot of value-oriented features, including possibly the ability for it to self-drive or to pay a subscription to self-drive, then I think people are more likely to say, you know what, I'd rather buy something used. And we're seeing that in the data where used EV sales price, you know, adoption rate is going up. I think year over year, it's at like 10% increase. But even just month over month, it's over 5% or something along those lines. So, and when we look at the used EV sales turnover, it's very comparable to used cars that are internal combustion engine or a hybrid as far as how many days they sit on the lot. So 43 days versus 46 days, that's really close. And when it comes to affordability, I think that's what people are choosing to do, is to go the used EV route because, you know, when we first had those incentives kick in for the $7,500 tax credit, a lot of people leased EVs, and the supply for the inventory for those EVs just started coming on the market. So there's a surge in the availability for inventory when it comes to used EVs in comparison to what we've seen in previous years. So that's really where I think the market is shining right now on affordability, is in the used EV segment.
So really quick, Matthew, just like give us a little of a picture of why people would consistently say like cost is a barrier when cheap options exist, but they still don't move. I mean, right, is it that, like to say that they're moving somewhat to the used EV market, but you know, we have a huge pool of potential buyers out there who could go EV.
Right. It's a good question. I mean, it might be in imagine it could be a couple of factors. One being just, are people even aware that there's at this point a really healthy used market for EVs? People who don't drive EV, do they know about that? If they have a friend or a family member who drives an EV, that person may be able to inform them. And otherwise, I just don't know if there's that awareness of there being a really, really robust at this point used market for EVs. But also, I wonder if it also to some degree goes back to how willing people are to make that jump and to make the adjustments in their life that they need to and to learn. For example, that when you do long road trips, you're going to charger hopping, versus filling up your gas tank from 2% to 100%. Right. And so people are just used to doing that versus you mean I'm going to only charge 15% or 20% and then, and then stop again. And it's just I think it's probably counterintuitive for people who aren't used to driving EVs or don't know about that. So I wonder if it's a mix of knowledge and just being willing, to jump into an EV.
All right. So really quickly, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I thought we should talk a little bit about the politics of this without getting, political. But so the mainstream narrative says intent skews heavily left to buy. Pew, I believe, says about 71% of Republicans or Republican-leaning people say they wouldn't consider an EV versus 71% of Democrats or left-leaning who would. But actual ownership is a different, very closer number. Auto Pacific ownership survey found current EV owners split about 54% Democrat, 30% Republican. So that's a gap, but nowhere near the total divide like the intent numbers might imply. And then there's also research out there where that matches voter registration to vehicle records. And it found that Republican/independent voters or more Republican/independent voters than Democrats linked to EV ownership in a majority of states that register by party. I'm not sure if I said that right, but basically there are more Republican registered owners than actual Democrats in the majority of states that register by party. And that's the closest thing we have to hard evidence that the two sides are much closer than we actually think generally. So, Nikki, what does your research ask about this, and how do you read that gap?
Yeah, so we have found in our research that EV ownership and EV consideration does tend to skew liberal. We don't ask specifically Democrat, Republican, but liberal leaning. And we have found that there is that skew, but it's not as strong as the 71% that Pew found. And sometimes we've looked at different consideration questions at the political split, and it is interesting to see that the differences between liberal and conservative are not as strong as you would or one would initially think. Because when you think about EVs, you tend to think that they're more liberal or more Democrat, but that's really not what we're seeing in the data in terms of a strong trend. It does tend to come out more often when we ask specific questions about being American made or other things like that. But for BEVs generally, yeah, the trend is not as strong as that. So I think that maybe what's happening is it has to do with the geography of the people who are considering the powertrain. So EV ownership tends to be more dominant in more urban areas, dense metro areas, where public charging infrastructure is more developed. So I think that it's possibly that those patterns in geography are being mirrored with the politics.
Right, right. And Lacey, what about you? Does it match polling the ownership data? What's your feel for this?
You know, it's interesting because when I think of what EVs are, they are reliable machines that, you know, have less components in them that have potential to break. You don't have to go fill up, you know, get an oil change, you know, every 3 months or whatever it is for those intervals. There's, you know, total cost of ownership that we know that is less than what you would have buying a gas car. And these qualities, as far as, you know, the performance and all that, what EVs are for, say, a more liberal-minded person are the people who initially adopted EVs in the early days, which were doing it for the reasons, as, you know, Matthew said, which was, I want to be environmentally conscious. I want to adopt an EV because it's good for, you know, reducing emissions and things like that. Whereas, you know, I see on more of the conservative side of things that people have the idea that they want to be fiscally responsible. And so both of those things are wonderful to have to meet in the middle, because EVs are the commonality between both of those. And now we're getting to a stage where it's becoming a more mass market consideration. So those people have made the decision based on those factors, but now these EVs need to win on merit. And again, people are working with antiquated information, so they think that there's not a lot of charging, whereas now it's like probably the most investment in EV charging that's happening on the public and private side that we've ever had before. And everyone is dumping money into it. And even just from like 4 years ago, the amount of charging stations on public road trips, and I've been doing road trips for God, what feels like forever in an EV across the country. And the fact is now is that there are so many options, and to also have the accessibility of the supercharger network for every major automaker eliminates the issue of being able to find an EV charger. So I think people don't realize that factor, and that now it's becoming about choice and how much, in comparing the cost of which charger that you want to stop at. And so I do think that it's interesting looking at the politics, but the reality is we're starting to move into a place where the mass market needs to decide if this is worth it based on the merit. And we're already, again, seeing, as I've mentioned before, that the best-selling car in the world is an electric vehicle. So we just need to get more people to realize that this isn't about politics. It's about the merit of a product and having people realize what it is at this point at face value.
Right. So, hey, Matthew. So can you help us understand if there's something in how like the left and right approach vehicle choice generally, like Lacey was saying, are independent of EVs specifically?
Well, I think she brought up a good point about a focus on environmental sustainability versus fiscal responsibility. And so, I mean, that certainly may be a differentiating factor, you know, in terms of how people decide what kind of car to buy, whether used versus new. One thing I think that may play a role that's interesting to think about, and I think it's just, I mean, one thing also is that based on what you said, Nikki, it almost sounds like political ID is kind of a proxy for other factors, other demographic factors, like, you know, whether you live on the coast, whether you live in a more, you know, densely populated area, you know, things like that, which correspond to charging infrastructure. But one thing that could be playing a role in terms of people's political identity and orientation is polarization. The United States has become more polarized politically in the past few decades and at a faster rate than other countries in the world. And as that happens, one consequence can be that certain stances get tied, like associated to a political party. And then, so for someone who is, for whom their political idea is an important part of their self-concept, like they may take on certain positions simply because they want to signal their group membership, not because necessarily have a deep conviction about that, you know, that belief or that attitude. So, I mean, historically, buying an EV has been pretty simple for people more left-leaning, because it's like, well, you know, early on in EV, you know, EV history in the United States, people could say, well, I'll deal with the inconveniences because I value sustainability. Now, like you're saying, Lacey, people can say, well, yes, I'm helping out the environment, but also they're awesome cars. they're good cars, period, regardless, of how much they contribute to sustainability. But I just wonder, for some conservatives, I wonder if the situation is more complicated, because if they want to signal party identification, there may be some messiness in buying an EV because, you know, they are supposed to reject like the green movement, because the green movement is all about being liberal and being woke. And so I can't be into sustainability and green technology, because that wouldn't be consistent with, you know, the party I'm a part of. So, but it sounds like that may be becoming less of a factor, just based on like, Nikki, what you're finding in your company organization. And so, but I do wonder if polarization is still potentially playing a role in, you know, just the dynamics that come along with that in terms of people's self-concept and how they think about themselves and how they think about how their lifestyle choices signal, you know, their membership, a certain political party.
I just want to add to that. It's interesting because even to this day, I will get comments in my comment section on every video every week that they will not buy a Tesla because of Elon Musk's stance on politics and what mm-hmm. he has done to speak up about his position in politics. Whereas like historically, you know, people were buying Teslas, as we mentioned before, like Matthew was like, I'm going to buy an EV. This is the best EV on the market, so I'm going to buy this. But now mm-hmm. people are so polarized and so charged emotionally with politics that to be fair, back in the day when I was working with Ford a lot, people would come up to me and say, when I'm standing next to a Lincoln, and they would say, I will never buy a GM, I'll always buy a Ford, because they didn't take the bailout money. So they've always had their political reasons as to why they're going to buy a car or not. And people are emotional beings. They're going to take that into consideration. But I do think that the stakes are maybe raised a little higher now with the polarization and people being on social media and having their opinions reinforced, or, you know, hearing certain things on the internet that are going to rile them up, because that's how social media, what it's designed to do. So right. It's still alive and well. The politics is for sure.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, thank you all for joining me. I wanted to end with asking you what you see happening going forward with sentiment and adoption trajectory. So I'm expecting August numbers to be up slightly from what I've heard. I'm not sure yet. I haven't seen any hard data, but I'm trying to be optimistic, right? I'd like to hear what you each have to say about what you think about the sentiment and what do you see happening over the next, say, 6 months or so. Maybe start with Nikki.
Sure. Yeah. So I think we are in a bit of a lull right now, an EV lull, because the $7,500 EV tax credit has been discontinued. Inflation is high, so affordability concerns are on the rise. So it does feel like things are progressing a little slow at the moment. But I think in the long term, when we ask buyers their perceptions about the BEV powertrain, a lot of people think that it is the future of mobility. And a lot of people think that it is an interesting idea, at least, but it's still, you know, there's some kinks and things that need to be worked out in the future, but that it is the future. That's where we're going. And then also, when you do zoom out of just the US, there is this whole globe, and there's a lot of development with EVs happening in other areas of the world. And I think that that is also going to encourage the U.S. to keep moving forward with EVs. Otherwise, you know, we risk being left behind. So I think there is long-term momentum behind the powertrain. It's just that the U.S. specifically right now is in a bit of a lull.
Right. Matthew, what say you?
Yeah, I would agree with Nikki based on what she's shared and just what I've observed. I think there probably in the long term will be a gradual increase of adoption, in part because as more people adopt, they'll have more conversations with people they know, friends and family members, and misunderstandings, I think, gradually will be corrected, you know, in more and more individuals. And as these cars get better and better, they will, you know, they on their own will be clearly, you know, equally good choices or better choices than, you know, than other powertrain types.
So Lacey, what do you see happening over the next little while?
You know, there is still going to be the impact of how this plays out with tariffs and things like that, considering that we have a global automotive market, as Nikki had pointed out. But we are seeing that China is obviously dominant in their EV adoption. Europe is also, obviously, we have emission standards in those places that are lacking now here, since the fine for emissions penalties has been drawn to zero. So automakers are going to do as they are intended and as their shareholders want them to proceed, which is to maximize profits no matter what. In the short term, that's very, very important. And they will continue to try to squeeze out as much as they can as far as profitability on the stuff that's already making them money, which is gas-powered cars. And they would like the transition to be slow, because then that gives them time to implement new engineering and new technology and those new advancements in the development of an EV powertrain or EV batteries. And I think if we don't start prioritizing it more, then we will have the American legacy automakers, or the legacy automakers that really depend on the U.S. market as their biggest markets, will shrink and become more consolidated and will lose global market share, as they are continuing to do at this moment. So I foresee EVs working out in the long run because of some of the points that I had made earlier, which is, you know, even if you take you know, the Model Y off the table as the best selling car, what are the other best selling cars that are on the market? Historically, we've seen a lot of the Japanese automakers do really well, Toyota and Honda. And why do people buy those cars? They buy them because they're affordable, they last a long time, they're reliable and durable, and that is what EVs offer. So I foresee that they have so many more benefits than even what those gas powertrain models that were so successful in the past offer, like things like full self-driving or to be able to have it remotely pick you up and things like that. But it's going to take some time and some reorienting. And obviously we'll see what happens within the next, you know, even just few months, if things start to change on the politics side of things, where new programs are going to be implemented for incentives for automakers to continue producing EVs.
All right. Well, I'm pretty excited about the future. I feel like we're still in the next year or two. It's hard to really say what's going to happen with policy the way it is right now. But I just see, you know, prices getting lower, if like battery prices getting lower, which is like the largest cost component of a vehicle, and the technology is getting so much better. Like in China, we're seeing, you know, 5-minute charging, 5.5-minute charging, and just better, like the Volvo EX60 and the BMW iX3, just to name a couple. Just the technology is just really improving. Where it's giving people an experience that they want to, you know, they just want to drive that instead of what they've been driving. But anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our show. So if you have any questions and comments, please leave them below. If you like the show, please push all our buttons. And thank you all very much for joining us. And we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with: thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose CAPS. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At CAPS, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first laser center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Oh my gosh, you can't be serious. You think making the pick is the hard part? No, it's not. The pick takes like 3 seconds. You know what's hard? The sweat. The time between locking in and cashing out. Yeah, you have a take, but in the end, it's not about the winners or losers. This is about us, man. Whether we're brave enough to sit through it. Don't fight the sweat. Live in it. Because you are an underdog. Underdog. Unleash your dog.
Terms may apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.